Welcome to WeAreTechnology.com's User Friendly 2.0 with host Bill Sickens, Technology Architect.
And this is User Friendly 2.0. I am your host, Bill Sickens. Gretchen, Bill, welcome to this week's show.
Hello.
Hello there.
Don't know about you guys, but it seems like it's been a tough week. I don't know. It's
Oh yeah.
Some go better than others. We've had some personal things and, you know, other stuff, but it just seems all the way around.
My Ring camera decided to go floppy on me.
Yeah, your Ring camera physically fell off the side of your house. That was one unusual thing.
Uh-huh.
It seems like programming this week, the computer has decided to fight me on everything I've been doing. So if you're having a bad technology week, you're not alone. All right. Well, we're going to be talking about brain-computer interfaces here in a little bit. Topic that we've had a lot of questions coming in on lately, and something is definitely something that is important to address. So we're going to be having that come right up. But let's not waste any other time. Let's go ahead and jump into the news, and then we can circle back to that. So what do we have in the news this week?
All right. Adobe finally releases Photoshop for Android, and it's free for now.
So Bill, what was your initial reaction to this?
Ew.
Yeah. So this is actually Adobe's third attempt to do Photoshop on phones. Okay. And the other two times have been less than impressive. I mean, that's the best way I can put it. This one is better. Now, I will say that I still prefer working Photoshop and all the rest of this from a PC right now. There are certain functions and different things in that that is just a lot easier to do that way. But the new version of it actually does have the basic tools. They do seem to work. It's not as complete as the desktop version, but you do have things like image editor, of course, clone, stamp, layers, transformations, cropping, and a lot of the AI that they've recently added to the desktop suite. So it is something that I think is, you know, don't run away screaming from it. Give it a try. And for basic functionality on the go, if you take a picture and you need to be able to edit it and send it to somebody on your phone, this will work for that purpose. And it does it a lot better than the other two versions of it. And by the way, before anybody goes, there wasn't a third version. There actually was. Photoshop Express is the one that, if you've seen Photoshop for a mobile device, you've probably seen. But about 10 years ago, Adobe put out a product called Photoshop Touch. It wasn't officially published. You could see it in beta and some other things too. And let's just say for Adobe's reputation, in my opinion, it was a good thing. It was never actually published.
Yeah. Amazon to spend $20 billion on data centers in Pennsylvania, including one at a nuclear power plant.
Well, I guess that's one way to get your electricity quick.
Yeah.
So a lot of upgrading is being done, especially with generative AI and some of the other new technologies on the market and just increasing use of the cloud. But these things do take electricity, and Microsoft did this about a year ago, attempting to reactivate Three Mile Island. And now Adobe is doing a similar thing. And actually, in some ways, this does make sense. If you build your data center at the power plant, you don't have to worry about infrastructure and transmission and all the rest of it. So I could see that being the case. Now, on the horizon, we're seeing the beginning of a lot of technologies that will minimize the power consumption for doing things like AI. So I think this is going to be fairly short-lived, increasing the data centers, maybe not, but the actual need of power to the extent that in some places it's overloading the grid, and there have been some countries where they've done data center updates like this that have actually created a situation where power is not available to the general public sometimes. And believe it or not, that didn't go over well.
I imagine.
Yeah, I can see. Imagine that.
So anyway, but yeah, so we'll have to see where this ends up going, but they are in it to win it. And $20 billion is, to me, a lot of money, but maybe not so much for Amazon.
WWDC 2025. Everything announced, including Liquid Glass, Apple intelligence updates, and more. So tell me about this.
Well, first of all, WWDC, if you're not familiar with it, is Apple's annual show where they talk about his trade show that you would like physically go to, where they talk about all the new great things that are coming out for Apple. And this includes updates and other stuff. Samsung, Microsoft, Google, all of the companies do something like this. And it's basically designed to showcase what's coming out. The last few years, in my opinion, with Apple have been somewhat lackluster. This year seems to have a little bit more going on that is going to be kind of cool, especially for Apple users. iOS 26 is coming out. It's a complete design change. And they just did this on Android too with the new user interface. And I actually kind of like it. I would have preferred it if I had known about it before it just showed up one morning and everything was different. But it actually turned out to be better, in my opinion. And that being the case, we're seeing the same thing with Apple. Now, I was hoping that Liquid Glass was similar to Liquid Skin in the Terminator, but it's not, unfortunately. It's just what they're calling the new user interface. I would say that it is correct that they say that it gives the software a more glassy look and feel. That's true. So the name kind of does make sense. And getting a little bit of a revamp actually makes a lot of sense. So some of the things they're adding, there's a dedicated games app that's coming in for centralizing the gaming experience. Now, Google, you have Play Store and all that kind of thing that ties all of this together. Apple, there were some different ways to do it. So it kind of narrows that down, which is kind of cool. And on the rest of Apple's operating systems and different products, macOS, iPadOS, watchOS, visionOS, and tvOS are all being updated. So we're going to see redesigns across the board and all of those things. And they're also incorporating a lot more of the AI technology that they've been laying out, including shortcuts and other things to make that work a little bit more seamless, as well as a number of upgrades to visionOS, which powers Apple's AR VR headset. And that's also something that's going to be interesting to see where that goes. CarPlay and AirPods also getting updates. CarPlay, like Android Auto, is a mapping system for in the car if you're not familiar with it. And they're going to be adding a few different things, including some texting upgrades and some things like that, which will be kind of interesting. I can't speak too much to that because I don't use CarPlay, but if it's like Android Auto, it makes sense to have that because it is a lot safer. One of the things that's interesting on AirPods is they are adding features that will include studio quality audio recording. And for those that have used it, they're saying that it actually works quite well, which would be something very nice to have. They're also adding a camera remote, and those features seem like things that would make a lot of sense. That it's weird sometimes when I see some of these updates, because that does exist in a lot of the competitors, but it, you know, makes sense if they don't have them that they would do it. And then some of the other things, Apple Wallet, polls, maps, and all those different type of things, basically across the board, iMessages, on and on, are also getting a lot of different updates as well. So this year, there are a lot of things rolling out, a lot more than there have been in the past. And as I've always said, I'm not a huge Apple user, but I think their products are good. They're rock solid. I just was raised and learned on a different ecosystem, and I like open source, which is my only preference. But it does seem like, with a few exceptions like the Lisa and other things, Apple does release technology that is pretty rock solid when it comes out, if you can afford it.
Yeah. Speaking of things to afford, the Switch's most unexpectedly significant upgrade is the eShop design.
Yep. So after a long time and delays being concerned on tariffs and everything else, the Switch 2 has arrived. And to get one right now, if you buy it from Best Buy, you can only buy them in the store. There are already scalpers with them on eBay and stuff for three times the cost, but they are available, and it doesn't seem to have the supply problems like the PlayStation 5 did when it came out. So it's interesting to see where they're going with this. And, you know, I don't know. This time for an update absolutely makes sense. Some concerns about Nintendo, like when the Wii was out and then the new next generation of that Wii U came out, the Wii was great. The Wii U was, in a lot of people's opinion, kind of awful. Mm-hmm. But this doesn't seem to be the case. The Switch 2 looks to be fairly rock solid, and they've had a number of things fixed, like a speed increase that was one of the concerns about the old one. There's a lot of improved specs, a few changes to the UI design, categories and filters being improved, more personalized discovery system. And then the eShop that's in the headline of this, it now uses Nintendo's red brand color rather than the random orange that was being used before. Don't ask me why they would have used orange, especially when that doesn't match Nintendo. So it does make sense that they would have changed that. And The Switch 2 on eShop runs above 5 frames per second. This was kind of a brag. I'm not sure that I would brag if it didn't before, but hey, you know, at least they're going in the right direction. So on that front, the Switch 2 is a product that we did not get a preview of. Normally we do on these things, but this particular one, I think just again, with all that's been going on in the world, they didn't have a lot of them available. And I am going to go ahead and pick up one of these. From everything I'm seeing, it looks like a pretty cool system. I've always liked the idea of portable gaming consoles, and Nintendo combining them both together, where it's both portable at the same time as one you plug into your television, kind of does make sense to me. The other thing of it is at least on the regular Switch, still having cartridges. I like ROM cartridges. They do work a lot faster than DVDs and Blu-rays and all that kind of stuff. Of course, you can hold more on the other disc, so there's a trade-off. But at the end of the day, being somebody that started on the old Atari and television and stuff, you're used to it starting when you turn it on. And it seems like when we went from vacuum tubes to solid state, everything got faster. When we went from cartridges to CD media and the other different kinds, it got slower. So, you know, just a personal preference on that front. But we will get the system and we will review it in the upcoming weeks. And if you have one, please let us know what it took to get it. Go to our website, userfriendly.show, and let us know if you like it, hate it, and what your experience has been.
Okay, Roku is testing a new look. So what does that mean?
So this seems to be the day of updates for user interface design and all that kind of thing. And some of these, I think, needed to happen because, you know, they were getting dated, and Roku is another one. They're right now in an experimental stage on this. They haven't rolled it out to everybody just yet. It's been given to a small number of Roku users, and basically what they're doing is their landing page, homepage, whatever you want to call it with them, adds new sections for quick access, which automatically populates with the apps you visit the most, among other things. So some of these things just make it a lot easier for you to be able to jump around and do stuff. I know I use the Fire TV primarily, and that's gone through a few iterations, and the last one that came out a while ago now added some of these things, including shortcuts. And once I got into that, I used it so much that I went back to do something I couldn't remember the old way to do it. So, you know, going in that direction does make these things easier. And you really want something like a television, smart television interface like this to be quick, easy to use. Because when you sit down and use your television, even if you're an engineer, you don't want to have to go through a bunch of stuff. And if you're somebody like my mom, if you can get it turned on, you're already doing good. So it needs to be easy.
Yeah.
Metafile's lawsuit against the developer of Crush AI Nudify app.
Yes. And while I'm not a big person on litigation, I do have to say on this one, I think it's definitely needed, because what happened is this company, Crush AI, was running ads on Meta's systems, as you can do, doing their AI app, promoting it, and that kind of thing, which, again, there's nothing unusual about that. However, the app is designed to take a picture of an individual and create a nude version of them. And this kind of thing really, and this is my opinion, there might be those that disagree with me, but I consider that to be completely unacceptable. There are so many reasons why this is a bad thing, and it's just simply not something that is necessary. And between things like revenge porn and people stalking people and all that kind of thing, it's just this is not a direction that we want to see AI being used for.
You've got better things to do with our time.
Yeah, basically. And other things too. And this can really hurt people, these kind of things. I mean, I attended a class on AI a few months back now. Boy, the year's gone by quickly. And they were talking about some of these things, and there is AI pornography. But that's still a little different than taking a live picture of a real person, changing it like this, and then potentially reposting it on social media or whatever the case may be. And so basically at the end of the day, Meta has standing, or at least they claim they have standing because of the advertising. And we're going to follow along with this because, again, I really think this is the wrong direction for this type of technology, which is something that's absolutely incredible to be used. But like we say so often on the show, when you get new technology out, the technology itself is benign. It's really what you do with it usually. Well, let's move on to our listener question that we're going to be talking about now. And that is this whole thing, and I'm going to forewarn you, we're going to start sounding a little bit sci-fi here, but everything is as it is in our current technology, is this idea of brain-computer interfaces. And as the name may imply, these are technologies that are installed usually as an implant or wearable, as a sensor or something of that nature that allows a user to control a computer by thought.
This makes me think of that Star Wars situation where Lando has that guy that he hangs out with in Cloud City who's got like this computer thing attached to his head. Is it like that?
Yeah, kind of, in some ways. I wouldn't have thought of that example. You would have, but it's actually a pretty good one, you know? And like I say, you've seen this stuff in sci-fi a lot. It's just now it's becoming a thing. And these are known by different names, brain computer interface, brain machine interface. I've even seen one called a direct electronic cognitive controller. There's different names for them out there. And what did, like I say, at the beginning of this, it's basically just a way to control the computer with your thoughts. Now, there's some different ways that these are set up, and we kind of just touched upon them, but there's a non-invasive component of this that uses external sensors, EEG caps, things that can record brain activity from the scalp, invasive BCIs. These are ones that are surgically implanted. And when you look at that kind of a standpoint, that's really where you go to the sci-fi format from that. And then the next one of it is extracortical, I think I'm saying that right, BCIs. And these are also an implanted one that are placed directly on the brain surface. So these are the different things that ways that they have this set up. There's companies that are doing these publicly right now. Neuralink is one you've probably heard of. BrainNet is another one. Anyway, these type of technologies are kind of interesting because when you think about the direction that this can go, it can be either really positive or really down a dark road, like with a lot of the new technology. So let's talk about the positive side of all of this, where we are seeing these being used. And a lot of it has to do with people that have disabilities. So you can use this type of technology. Let's say somebody has damage to their nervous system, they're paralyzed, you know, those kind of things, which happens, unfortunately, to a lot of people. Well, what this can do is you can think like you would now where you're going to move your arms or legs. And instead of going through the damaged nerve cluster, you have a transmitter that picks up the brain waves. You have a receiver that's usually implanted on the backside of the nervous system where the damage is, and it bridges the gap so you can move again, you know, that kind of a thing. And assistive technology, we see this going on down that road for people that, you know, maybe are unable to see or that type of a thing. They can interact with stuff from that standpoint. Now, the next step that this goes on is a little bit more, I don't know, not as necessary, but it seems like kind of fun, is what they call immersive experiences. So things like you can walk up to your front door and think it and it'll unlock, you know, stuff like that. And it'd be nice if that worked a little faster, but you know, those type of things. And the other one is controlling video games. Now, as funny as this would sound, and you know, maybe not necessary for actual surgery, I could see where this kind of technology would be used in this way. And the funny thing about it is the idea of doing this is nothing new. Atari had prototyped a system back in the early 80s that was supposed to be able to pick up your brain waves and control your Atari console or computer or whatever they were going to do with it. They never did get it to work. We didn't see it on the market, but there are a few out in the wild of these things. Mm-hmm. And what we're seeing now is where that kind of technology is possible. And it's actually something that we're going to see more of. So as things change, like as augmented reality came out, and that was a big deal, AI recently, this type of stuff where I think we're going to see a lot more direct interaction between computer components and people. I believe the term for that is cyborg, but it does have a lot of advantages. So I'm going to throw this out to both of you. What do you think about this kind of thing?
I think it's pretty good.
I think it has a lot of potential. Yeah.
I mean, I could see where there's
Well, isn't there like an implant that people who have, what is that? That breathing problem at night.
Sleep apnea. The implants called Inspire. Yeah.
Yeah.
And those kind of cybernetics are around, and they're fairly new technology, although some of that's been around for a while because, you know, they're improving on it. But the Inspire is a, for example, basically installs, it monitors your breathing. As you say, it has a wired sensor that goes up to the muscle in your throat that usually goes bad when you have sleep apnea. And when it senses that you're starting to go into a cycle, it will stimulate that nerve and stimulate the muscle as a result. And as somebody that has had this problem and has had that particular implant, I can tell you it's wonderful to no longer need the CPAP machine. And this is an example of something where I really am happy with implanted technology, you know?
I got a chance to talk with the people after there was like a team that were available during your surgery. And they would be wonderful to talk to probably about this type of stuff. They were really nice and informative. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, in fact, we should see if we can get them as a guest on the show because, again, that type of thing, I think we're going to see coming down the road. Now, BrainNet is an interesting one, and it's basically a network that allows two brains to communicate and collaborate directly.
Oh, I already had that with Jeremy.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, he and I could think the same thing. I don't know how we did it. You know, we just did.
I think this would even beat Wi-Fi 7, frankly. I mean, oh my goodness. So some of the considerations and concerns about this, medical risks, obviously, anytime you do a surgery, it can have side effects. So you want to be careful with that. Ethical concerns, using this kind of technology for something other. And that's one of the things I did want to talk about because this has come up, is there is starting to be a problem where companies are wanting to use information received through these kind of interfaces for marketing and advertising. And that does create, in my opinion, a privacy problem, like big time.
Yeah.
And I think that would be considered misuse of the technology. Yeah, but they want to make money off your thoughts, you know, and talk about something you've seen in a movie, probably, if you've ever seen any sci-fi. Yeah. And one of the other things is cognitive fatigue. Interesting new syndrome, but cognitive fatigue, if you're doing complex tasks, I don't know. I mean, I think that would probably be based on the interface, and some electronics would do that and others would not. But I don't know about you. I can honestly say, and you'd said that you were both would not really have a problem with this. I can honestly say I would not have a problem with this kind of thing at all, as long as I knew what the implant was, where it came from, and everything it did. Those would be my requirements. Yeah. I'm certainly not going to let someone implant something that I don't know what it is.
You know? Yeah, I'd like to know the origin of what country was it made in, what ethical standards are part of the maker's, you know, dogma, so to speak. That's important.
And one of the other things I think that is very important on this wearable ones, you just would take off, but anything that's implanted, you absolutely must allow the user to have an off button. You should be able to turn it off if you choose to do that, you know, keeping control over your own thoughts. I mean, now that this is actually a thing that's, there's starting to be some concerns with, is definitely a thing that, you know, you want to think about. And the other thing is more people are getting implants, rules and laws that say that a government can't come and disassemble you or something. You know, there actually is a cyborg foundation, by the way, that handles these kind of things, which is interesting. But just an interesting thought. Send us your questions. This is User Friendly 2.0. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Welcome to the second half of our show. Please send us your questions and your comments as you've been doing. Userfriendly.show is the website to do that. Check it out. Click on the Ask a Question button and send it in. We really appreciate the feedback we've been getting from everybody. It has been absolutely incredible. The other thing on the website right now is we are open for contributor signups. If you would like to jump on once in a while, if you go to Comic Cons or technology shows, or just like to talk the topics, we want to hear from you. We love to work with whoever we can, and the more, the merrier. We open 3 times a year for signups. February is one of those times, so go ahead and check it out. The link is right there at userfriendly.show. We've got a great interview coming up for you here next. We have been talking AI a lot here, as pretty much everywhere.
if you haven't heard about in the last 2 years, well, something new for you, and you're probably one of the very few people that haven't, because it has been a big deal. Artificial intelligence technically is not really a new thing, but the generative AI that we have now, in other words, where it can learn, is something that is really changing just about everything. And we're seeing it on all of the different fronts, all of the different places that we work with, whether you're in a tech industry or not. A lot of concerns that have been coming out. Is AI going to come steal your job? And we've had those conversations. And again, I don't think it will. I think it is going to change a lot of things, but I think it's going to be an augmentation, not a replacement, for most of the things we do, which will make life easier. But you have to know how to do it and deal with it and be able to work with it properly. And along those lines, it's good to hear and see some of the different things that different people are doing. Interview coming up here is a technology that we actually did look into a little bit last year that can go through and take something like a transcript of the show and be able to create a blog entry complete with pictures and everything else. And that's not the only technology they offer. So instead of me trying to sit here and explain it, I'm going to say, let's just jump to the interview. So with no further ado, here we go. Joining us now, Stefan with moderniqs.com .com, right? Welcome to the show.
Hello, hello. Thanks for having me again.
You know, I have to remember all these new top level domains. It's not just .com anymore by a lot. So the whole chat, you know, you get something completely different. So for anybody that didn't listen in the past, first of all, why didn't you? But second of all, you've been on the show last year talking about AIs and some of the amazing things you're doing with that. And glad you're coming back, because it looks like you've launched a lot of new functionality and workflow and different things like that. So tell us about what you're doing and what has changed.
So yeah, in the past we focused on our one-click apps, where you can, you know, do hours and hours of work in one click, but it's like a fixed functionality kind of thing, so it's not customizable. It's more like a high-quality mass production, for example, blog articles. And now what we're doing now is we're trying to create the website with the most free AI apps on the internet.
Yeah. Okay, can you explain that a little bit?
So, for example, I gave the example before for you as a podcast host, for example. So you create a video which you upload to your YouTube. So you take the link from your YouTube video, you put it in our transcript generator, and it'll automatically get you a formatted transcript where you can see the speaker and, you know, everything is laid out nicely. And then, so this is the first app, and then we will have a workflow soon, so you can chain up several, like, or unlimited apps, not sure yet, to create workflows. So the second app could take the transcript and create several headlines for blog articles, for example, from that transcript. So you can then choose a headline or two. And then the third app in your workflow can create the article, which in itself would have usually been something like 20 hours or so. And So the system will be, I think it'll be a tier system where you can create the workflows, but you need to execute the apps themselves. And then in the future, we'll have workflows where you just press one button and all the apps you have in your workflow are going to execute all at once. This is basically the idea behind the whole thing. And I mean, let's say a blog article usually takes 20, with ChatGPT tech kind of takes 4 hours at our quality level. As you asked before, yes, it's doing images, uploading to your website, and a lot more. But still, even if you would have this app, it would still be a lot of clicking around to, you know, get a transcript from some website or some service, and then downloading the transcript, uploading it into your next, maybe into copying it into ChatGPT to get some headlines, then copying the headlines into our system to create the article, right? So it's like still a lot of clicking, and we're kind of trying to reduce any kind of workflow to one click. Yeah.
No, that just sounds amazing. What did it take to put this together? Because we talk AI and generative AI all the time here, but the actual work that goes into producing something like this is massive, isn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of Depends. It depends. There are loopholes. We found a loophole. So,
oh.
But I'm not going to tell the loophole.
No. So
a difference, for example, would be all the things you can do with our apps, you could do with ChatGPT as well. But with ChatGPT, you would need to learn the ideal prompt, and you would still need to write all the prompts. With our system, okay. You can just, you can just paste in the YouTube link, and the system creates the perfect perfect transcript, for example. Yeah. Yeah.
So, like you're having an AI run the AI, kind of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what it sounds like. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, it just sounds amazing. So tell us a little bit about the quality of the output. Is it something you still need to read through? Is it something that's kind of just ready to go? And you also mentioned it auto uploads and those type of things. Let's talk a little bit more about that too, because it sounds like this really could save a lot of work.
Mm-hmm. So something you need to learn, or I guess everybody kind of forgets every time they use ChatGPT is give the correct inputs, right? So for example, you can create a podcast or you can format your podcast transcript, but so you only paste in the transcript into ChatGPT and you say, format it, please. But then you don't enter your name, you don't enter the guest's name, you don't enter, you know, maybe the output language or whatever, right? And so what our system does as well is it has all these. So this is basically a lot of forms, and for example, the transcript generator, you have one form field where you just enter your URL, but then you have other optional forms. So where you can enter additional information to make the output better. So it's more like you don't forget the most important steps to get the perfect output.
So if you put more into it, you get better quality, right?
You get better quality, yeah. In any kind of app, really. And this is like people use ChatGPT, but they always forget to add this and that, and then the output is good, but it could be better.
You got to wonder what the AIs are saying behind the scenes about us when we try to do some of this stuff. Did you see that ridiculous question? No,
I don't want to think about this too much.
Neither do I. Of
crazy, you're going to think we're stupid. Freaky,
I don't know. Yeah. Man.
Tell us about what you would consider to be an ideal use case for your type of technology. I know transcripts and all that type of thing, but give us an actual example of somebody doing something and how this would save them time and money and all the rest of it. It obviously would. So easy question.
Well, so basically just think about all the software tools you have currently can be replaced.
Oh,
right. So really the trick is you have this one system where you do your task one, and then you copy the text or you download your file or whatever, and you paste it into the next thing, and you set things up, and then you let it run, and then you copy it or download it and upload it to your website, for example, right? So just take the very simple example of people taking ChatGPT to create text, an article, which is just text, right? So you would still, ChatGPT writes you the article, but you would still need to copy the text, open your website, log in, create a new post, paste it in, publish it, you know, mm-hmm. and so on, and create images and all these things. And so this is basically all the seconds. Like if your stuff runs really fast, you're spending your time on seconds, on clicks. And we're trying to reduce.
Well, and those seconds add up. I mean, you're still now you've saved the hours of writing the article. That's great in either case. Mm-hmm. But you're talking about saving another 10 to 20 minutes per post, not having to deal with all of that. And the other side of this, from what I'm hearing, is the person that's handling this wouldn't have to have the technical expertise to operate like a WordPress or program, a website or whatever the case may be, because that's handled automatically. So that seems like that could free up a lot of full-time employees, really. And now you're saving money on that too. Is that something you'd agree with as kind of a way to look at this?
It's you're probably in. So with our system, you will probably be more in the position of thinking, how can I do my job better? And not how can I do my job? Because the job will be done by the system. Right. So it's like, it is freeing up time, And you can think about how can I improve my quality, you know, what it's
maybe like more time for research.
If you can combine thousands of apps, you can basically automate all your work, I guess. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, without question, right?
Yeah.
But and the thing of it is, though, is when you're saying thousands of apps, that's overwhelming. But from what it sounds like you're doing, you're vetting that so that you don't even have to really try to figure that piece of it out either. You just create the workflow, right? So how do you do that?
So it's not set up yet, but it'll probably be something like you just choose the name. You can have your drop. So you create an account. Right. And then on your account page, you will have an overview where you can create a workflow. And inside the workflow, you can just have a drop down where you enter the app name and then just click it. And then it'll be added to your workflow. So it's ultra simple. It's like the most user friendly thing you can have. Right.
We like that around here. I mean, you know, it kind of works.
Yeah. I mean, select the app and then select the next app. This is how it's going to be. Yeah,
I mean, just the ease of that is to me quite amazing. I know you have some examples on your website. We'll give that out at the end of the interview here. But before we started recording today, you gave me a link and I just pulled it up and I'm looking at it. I think this is written better than most human-made articles that are out there. And I believe that the only issue we could find with the whole thing was you felt that some of the headlines should be bolder, like the font bolder. Like, this article is, I don't know, how many words is an average article? Obviously, our listeners can't see what's on the screen here, but this is quite extensive.
Our articles are something between, I think, 800 and up to 3,000.
Yeah,
and this is produced, uploaded, the images, the styling, the layout, everything is done in like 10 seconds.
Right? Yeah, it's very clear and orderly and appealing to the eye, which is nice.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, too, because it looks and feels very, very professional. All right. So let me ask you this question. You're using photos and text and all that stuff. Is there a way to ensure that, you know, stuff's not plagiarized? Or you're not using someone else's material, because that's been in the news lately and isn't an issue that you would want. Is there a way with your system to be able to do a plagiarism check?
Yeah, well, it's so what you do is you end. So when you see this article, this is only enter the headline and press create. The plagiarism check, for example, is automatically done in the background. So basically, plagiarism checks. So just have a look at. So here's some workflow. You go to ChatGPT and you tell it, please create an image, and then you say what image, and then it creates it, and maybe your fifth try is something good. But then the image is 3 megabytes. So you get it downloaded. Then you need to find a website to, you know, change it from PNG to WebP so the image is small, right? And then you need to upload the small. So you need to upload your big image to convert it to a small image, need to download your small image, need to upload your small image to your website. And then you need to, you know, kind of get it into your content. And then you need to make it float. Like these images, what you see there, they are float left and right. And yeah, so this is like a heck of a lot of work. Plagiarism checks. I mean, every image should have a text for blind people because blind people don't see images, right? Alternative image texts. And these should match the content and what is on the image and keywords and so on. And this is all done by our system, yeah.
And it looks like this is also laid out with a table of contents with the individual sections being very clickable, right? You know, alongside the article. And again, you're saying this is created in seconds, not hours.
Basically, so these articles, they've been an upgrade. We just over Christmas we updated around 2,000 articles automatically, right? And so these actually don't have a table of content yet. But this is basically. The system took the headline and created a new article with it.
Okay, so that's what we're okay. So these aren't just links to within the article. There are other articles, so you could drill down essentially if you were interested in a specific topic. Then, and that's automatic.
Mm-hmm. So these are almost like references, like or can you do that with like I know if you write like papers for universities, you usually have to refer to where you got your information from. Can you do that with this too?
Not yet. This is you input your background information, your title and your background information, and in this case the category as well. And then the system creates the article, the references. Look, this is something AI is not at the stage where it can do it and it's 100% correct.
Right, sure.
So,
considering the technology is less than 2 years old, though, I wouldn't complain about that.
Exactly. Features like these we're going to implement as soon as they can be, you know, precise, on point. Yeah.
Right, right. Mm. So did you train your own AI or, you know, because the reason I ask that is because we get a lot of listener questions in on how you create an AI, and the answer is really you don't. It kind of creates itself in most cases. Mm-hmm. But what is the process to do that?
So currently we did not train our own. So we're in the process of training an own system, but we dynamically, you know, choose whoever is. I think the subheadlines in our current articles are made by Gemini, Google.
Okay.
And the text should be OpenAI, I think. I think this is maybe O1 Mini. I'm not sure. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's like a collaborative?
Collaborative, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. This is like, yeah. There's multiple AIs running everything. I think the images currently are made by Flux. Yeah. But it's dynamically changing whoever is the best for the job, yeah.
Go looking at this stuff, you know, spoiler alert, I think in another 2 years it'll be AIs and cyborgs running the world, so we're kind of heading in that direction. Right. And I have no problem with when I look at this type of a thing and then look at the news articles that are published by some outlets where you have misspelled words and the wrong headlines and the wrong pictures. It's like, you know, you're kind of going, what is going on here? And then I look at this and it's professionally written. And you know, a North American publication that is satire called The Onion uses AI to write all of their articles now. And we've noticed since they changed over to that about a year ago, the quality was already good. It was actually better than some news outlets. But it's gotten to a point now where it's just like sitting down and reading, okay, you know, this seems very believable that this moon fell and hit the earth and Congress didn't act, you know, kind of thing, because it's done, you know, well. And I think a big part of presentation is the formatting and just the professional grade of not misspelling. When I saw the word Nissan from the car company was spelled wrong in the headline of their article on their press release. So this probably avoids a lot of that human error stuff.
Look, just want to throw the different direction, and they are competing with AI now. It's kind of hard.
Yes, right? I would say so. So the pictures, and I might have already sort of asked this, but the pictures that are generated, are the pictures pulled from some resource, or is that actually generated when the article is generated and is unique?
These are all unique, yeah.
These are all AI generated. So the pictures we're looking at here are AI generated. So, okay, that's amazing. Yeah. Because what I'm looking at here looks like a picture of a boardroom on this particular one, and I would not know that wasn't an actual photo that somebody somewhere took.
Yeah, what you see there, except the internal links, so the orange links in the text, everything else you see there in the article is just how it's going to come out when you just enter the headline, basically. If you enter background information like transcripts and so on, the quality of the text will be even way better. Yeah. And also, this is not having a table of content yet, which is like a check mark. You click it and the table of content will be below the headline automatically as well. Yeah.
That's just amazing. So how does somebody check out your tech? Where do they go? What do they do?
So they go to modernIQs.com and create an account and use as many AI apps as they can take.
Okay, well, that sounds like a challenge a little bit. So I'll tell you what, I'll have my AI contact your AI and they'll do lunch and we'll all go retire.
Do you think you're talking to myself, like,
yeah,
only in the same regards. Do you think you're talking to me? I'm not
doing podcast interviews anymore. They take too much time.
Yeah, so I'm saying here, we don't host anymore. I mean, this is all just generated, you know, automatically. Okay. And the funny thing is our ratings have gone up 100% since we started. No, I'm kidding.
I have this urge to go beep boop.
Yeah, really, you know, this is as long as we don't get
But seriously, I think if you use AI to we have this funny AI text generator, right? If you use if you can replicate yourself and you can do the sarcastic version all the time, it's so good. You know, things are going to be more interesting, I think. More funny to watch and so on.
It's amazing where all this is going. Just a little aside, the recording tool we use for doing the show has AI and has for about 6 months. And one of the problems is when you do online interviews, a lot of times the upload won't finish. It cuts off of, you know, the last 30 seconds or so. The AI can actually go through, mimic the person's voice, and generate the missing piece as long as you tell it what to say. And even if you don't, just from the article, it will, or from the thing, it will be able to probably get what was going to be said. And you're taking that now to being able to have a consumer base use that kind of a tool to generate these things. I don't know. I still think this is amazing. I did the first time we talked, and that has not changed. So, all right, moderniqs.com, check it out. And also send us your questions if you go through these type of things. And Stefan, we're going to send those to you. And maybe we can get you back to answer some of the listeners' questions. We had some last time too, and I think now is probably going to generate a lot more, because the whole concept of this is something that people will enjoy. And you're going to get both sides of it too, because I know there's people out there concerned about AIs and some of these things too. And I think from that standpoint, it's like any technology, you can use it for good or evil, you know, it's just use your powers for good or evil. Right. So, but at the end of the day, the actual benefit of these type of things takes a piece of a project you would have to pay somebody to do. And you're not going to lose the job because that person's going to be able to do something else that might be a little more necessary, but it's not like they're going to be fired. Right. So it's a collaborative, not a replacement. Wouldn't you think?
I think you should use AI to do your job better. Then you don't need to worry.
Agreed. So, all right. Well, listen, thank you for joining us again today. And we look forward to talking to you a couple of months down in the future. And everybody, please send in your questions and your comments. We'd love to get them and love to put Stefan on a hot seat here to answer them for you. So, well, listen, best of luck. Thank you again for being here.
Thanks for having me, guys.
So what do you think about AI? There's a lot of different applications. And as we were saying before the interview started, a lot of different places this is going. And really, I think from a positive standpoint, there's going to be a lot of applications for this kind of technology. And, you know, I think it actually will be beneficial. So definitely something to think about. My feeling on it is, and, you know, I look back at where are we using this right now? And outside of the show, as I think pretty much everybody knows, I'm a software designer and have a number of clients and get asked about this all the time. And I find that it's a very different perspective. There's a lot of people out there that will try to sell you some kind of an AI solution, which may or may not be right for your business or for whatever you're doing. And it is one thing you want to look at. If it's something that can benefit you, it's definitely worth the investment. But you want to make sure that that's the case and that you're able to have a use case that is applicable to something that is going to actually create a benefit for whatever it is you're doing. In a lot of other industry, if you're not a business owner and you work for somebody and the concern comes up, is your job going to get replaced? And again, I think we're looking at a situation where there's going to be a lot of change that this will create. It already has started to, but it's going to continue to go in that direction over the next couple of years. And I think as long as we learn to work with it, it's going to be something that will help us do what we're doing instead of completely replacing it. Until next week, this is User Friendly 2.0, keeping you safe on the cutting edge.
User Friendly 2.0 copyright 2013 to 2025 by User Friendly Media Group Incorporated. All rights reserved. Content is the opinion of the show's participants and not necessarily this station or platform. Requests for material use, interviews, CCPA, privacy notice for California residents, GDPR information for UK and EU residents, and any other feedback may be submitted at userfriendly.show. We welcome your input. Thank you for listening.